Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicy with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are so back, ladies and gentlemen. Episode 200. What a monumental achievement this is. 200 freaking episodes. Wow. We've been at this 2 years, July 1st. So in just about 9 days, just about a week, we'll officially be at 2 years of the Surprise Jab Podcast. Now, I actually did record an episode 200 yesterday, and then I accidentally didn't save it. I accidentally clicked out of the site that I record on Audacity, so that was very painful. So we're not going to be doing as much as I had hoped for today's episode, but nonetheless, I do have a lot of fun stuff. Of course, kicking things off, we have some new UFC fights to talk about and some new UFC news, which we're going to open with as well. I have a movie review, that is right, we watched Fight Club. Anyone ever seen Fight Club? I'm going to give you a full rundown on that. And as well, we have a recap of UFC Baku, which I just watched yesterday. And as opposed to recording right after it came out, I've kind of given it now at least like 24 hours, just about, probably a bit less. So we're going to go through the entire card and talk about what is next for each and every one of the fighters. But guys, thank you for all the support, all those who listen, and all those who encourage me. You're the only reason I can keep doing this. Well, to an extent, I kind of started this on my own without any support, and I've kind of done it without any support. But nonetheless, I absolutely love all of my listeners. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. But first off, I think the biggest thing going on in the UFC sphere, and that is the fact Jon Jones is officially retired. That is correct. Watch the UFC rankings page for an update Tuesday when they kick Jones out of the pound for pound and the championship spot. And yes, according to Dana White, Tom Aspinall is the new official heavyweight champion. Not interim. No. The undisputed champion. And honestly, this just sucks. This feels like the Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler situation. You know, Conor McGregor strings us along for so long. I might come back. Then it's like, yo, I'm not. And that's kind of what's happened with Jon Jones. And he's had almost a 900-day reign as heavyweight champion. One title defenses, wins over Ciryl Gane, and Stipe Miocic just never will probably not age well for a while. So it's unfortunate for Tom Aspinall, but someone was bringing up that if Francis Ngannou were to come back, Francis Ngannou versus Tom Aspinall would be a massive heavyweight fight, and I could definitely get behind that, but I just don't see Francis Ngannou ever fixing his relationship with the UFC. I think that is unfortunately tarnished, so that's something we can probably axe off. But when we talk about some of the heavyweight fights on today's UFC Baku card that we're reviewing, I'm going to give some ideas on who Tom Aspinall's first title defense could be at when we get to the Curtis Blaydes versus Von Kuniev recap, so we'll stay tuned for that. But we do have a plethora of new UFC fights to discuss with you all. Kicking us off, Sergey Pavlovich taking on Waldo Cortez Acosta. That's right, the number 4 and number 7 heavyweights in the world. If you want to see Sergey Pavlovich versus Tom Aspinall 2, this is how you get there. And Sergey needs to come out and get a knockout over Waldo Cortez Acosta. You're in China. You're close to Russia. You are the home crowd favorite, in my opinion, compared to Waldo Cortez Acosta, who I believe is from Cuba or might even be Panama? Where's he from? The Dominican Republic. Yes, that's where he is. The Dominican Republic. So, Waldo Cortez Acosta, of course, has somehow found his way up into the top 10. He's ranked number 7. Makes no sense to me. But I've always brought up the point that the top 6 heavyweights in the UFC can beat the other 40 on the roster pretty handsomely. So, if Waldo Cortez Acosta can pull off an upset, which I could see him easily doing, that would be crazy. He'd be ranked number 4 in the world. But if Sergey Pavlovich can get back to his knockout ways, I think he should be sitting pretty. That'll be definitely the third or second fight on that UFC Shanghai card in terms of main event downwards. Another matchup announced, this one for UFC Abu Dhabi, July 26th, welterweight action, as Muslim Salikov will be taking on Carlos the Lion Leo. Carlos Leo came into the UFC, tough defeat to Renat Fakhretdinov, a lot of people thought he won, follows it up with a round one knockout of Alex Morono, absolutely beautiful. Now he's taking on a guy in Muslim Salikov. Winner of this will probably be one step closer to a ranked opponent. I'm thinking for Carlos Leo versus Muslim Salikov, winner takes on Michael Chiesa. I would absolutely love that. Or winner takes on Vicente Luque. I think there's a lot of options you can do with this. But I'll definitely be rooting for Carlos Leon on this one. But don't count out Muslim Salikov. He may be past 40, but that boy still packs knockout power. Here's one for UFC Noche. Noche UFC in San Antonio, Texas, September 13th. No idea if it's a fight night or a pay-per-view yet. I still don't think the UFC knows, but lightweight division, Jared Flash Gordon back as he takes on gifted Hafa Garcia. Hafa Garcia probably peaked with that Clay Guida win. I would have to say the Clay Guida win was probably the peak of his career, and that was 2 years ago now. As for Jared Gordon, he just knocked out Thiago Moises, and I was counting him out in that fight. So Jared Gordon, he's 36. He's still getting it done. Dude is an absolute legend. And as for Hafa Garcia, no, he turns 31 this August. This is the year to kind of dial it in, get serious about making a run up the rankings. And whoever wins this, I think is going to be one fight away from a ranked opponent. Winner of this can take on your Drew Dobers, your Grant Dawsons, your, we'll talk about him, Ignacio Bahomadez, guys like that. Those are the type of people that the winner of this can be set up against. So that should be one to keep your eyes on. We'll probably be on the prelims of that event. UFC 317, which does go down in 6 days. I am very perplexed. We're still making fights, but Cedric Dumas takes on Jackson McVeigh in the men's middleweight division. Jackson McVeigh, I'm so sorry for that. Jackson the Moose McVeigh. McVeigh, 6-0, biggest career wins over no one I know. Dude looks like a hillbilly. I kid you not, he looks like a thug, he looks like a druggie. I'm not trying to be mean, Jackson, I'm just observing the picture that I can see of you here on my screen. And as for Cedric Dumas, like a career criminal, I mean, this dude has more arrests than UFC fights. He's 3-3 in the UFC, and he's been arrested at least 7 times, so I have no idea how he's still in the UFC. Biggest win is over Cody Brundage. I'll have to do a bit more investigation on Jackson McVeigh, but as far as I'm concerned, Cedric Dumas might be getting a layup win here. And I have zero clue how he's still in the UFC. I'm actually so perplexed by it. He definitely has insides with the elites, let me tell you that. Another matchup announced for you. UFC Nashville, of course, July 12th. That UFC Nashville card's looking pretty fun. Looking like just one of those random cards with a crowd that is just filled with some fun fights. Mike Davis takes on Mitch Ramirez in the lightweight division. Mike Beast Boy Davis, Mitch the Fight Stalker Ramirez. Mitch lost his UFC debut, and as for Mike Davis, he's 4-2. Never really been able to get over the top level guys when he takes them on, but I think a win over Mitch Ramirez, this is kind of set up as a layup for Beast Boy Mike Davis, but never count out Mitch Ramirez. This dude fought on The Ultimate Fighter, if I'm not mistaken, and he packs a bit of a punch sometimes, but I'll probably ride with Mike Beast Boy Davis getting a submission or a ground and pound knockout. Two more fights for you. UFC Vegas 109 on August 9th has a featherweight bout between Andre Touchy-Feely and Christian C-Rod Rodriguez. Ooh, Andre Feely and Christian Rodriguez. Andre Feely just can't catch a break. This dude just keeps getting finished or losing fight of the night decisions. I mean, I could not with Andre Feely. He has just had, 23 UFC fights, and he's just, his ceiling is Bill Algeo Cub Swanson. All right, I kid you not, but Andre Feely, you know, I'd love to see him in EA Sports UFC. I think he would be deserved to be put in the video game. That would be, I think, a highlight of his career. And as for Christian Rodriguez, call him the Prospect Killer. C-Rod is a terrible name. Prospect Killer should be his nickname. This guy has beaten Austin Bashee, Raul Rosas Jr., Isaac Dalgarian. He was actually the first man, if I'm not mistaken, to beat Cameron Stamen. I mean, this dude beats all the undefeated guys. It makes absolutely no sense. And mind you, his three UFC losses are to, like, Melquiz Acosta. They're to, like, Julia DeRosa. He loses to, like, Jim Millers, if you will. He loses to stable guys, but anyone who's undefeated rising up, he beats. So this will be a big test here. I love the matchmaking at featherweight, because you're really going to get a grasp here of his Christian Rodriguez can get over someone who's not an undefeated prospect, and if Andre Feely can get back in the win category. So that's great matchmaking there. Love that fight. And the final one that we've had announced, this one also for UFC Shanghai, joining Sergey and Waldo, August 23rd. Flyweight division as the Tabishan Eagle, Suma Darji, gets a hometown China fight as he takes on Kevin Borjas. Kevin Borjas, 1-2 in the UFC, fights out of Peru. Picked up a massive win over Ronaldo Rodriguez, a fight he was not supposed to win. He was set up to be crushed in, and instead he pulled off the upset, which I love to see. As for Suma Darji, this dude has had 8 UFC fights, and I swear he's always in the mix. You know, he'll beat Mitch Raposo, Malcolm Gordon. He'll lose to, I can't remember his name. Because y'all remember that July, I think it was 2022 card, he took Matt Schnell. He almost knocked out Matt Schnell and then got submitted by Matt Schnell. Absolutely crazy. So I'll be rooting for Sumo Darji in that one, but I might have to assess my picks once we get into that August territory, because Kevin Borjas is not to be counted out. So those are all your new UFC news. A lot of exciting stuff. And let me just tell you, the future looks bright in terms of UFC fandom. I'll tell you what else is bright. That is the future in watching movies, watching TV, because you can watch any movie you want on any streaming service anywhere you want. My buddy Ryan the other night was like, hey, Zach, do you want to watch this movie? I watched it last night and I want to watch it again. I was like, what movie is it? And he's like, it's Fight Club. And I'm like, you know what? It's been a long time coming. Let's watch this movie. So I did finally get around to watching Fight Club, starring Edward Norton and Brad Pitt. Actually also has Jared Leto, a young Jared Leto, and Holt McCallany. If no one knows who Holt McCallany is, he's one of the leads from Mindhunter, one of my favorite films. He's a minor role in the film, but the two main guys are Edward Norton and Brad Pitt. So the entire premise of this movie, guys, is that Edward Norton is an insomniac. He's working just a dead-end corporate job. And then he meets this guy, Brad Pitt, Tyler Durden, who kind of just changes his perspective of life. He's very loose. He very is, like, philosophical. He's all about meaning. And eventually, they come to form a fight club. And these fight clubs actually spring up all over the country. And it kind of takes you through the journey on how Tyler Durden and Edward Norton's characters. Edward Norton is just called the narrator in the film. He's never actually has like a real name, comedically enough. And it takes you through their journey of just these two guys who meet each other to something even bigger, leading revolutions. Now, I won't explain the big plot twist here, because the plot twist, I think, is essential to watching the film. But I just say, when I saw the plot twist, it made sense, but it was also kind of just like, I can think of so many scenes where I don't know how it worked. So I will say Fight Club, I'm giving it a 7.5 out of 10. You know, it was a very weird movie. Like, throughout the whole movie, I'm just questioning, where's this going? Where's this going? Where's this going? And then it ends and I'm like, ooh, so that was the climax. That's what we were building up to. I don't know. It was just such a weird, weird movie. IMDb has it 8.8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes has it 81%. Just about almost certified fresh, almost. And Chuck Pachinok, the author of the book, you know, I listened to his episode with Joe Rogan. He is a very interesting guy. So knowing kind of the mindset of the guy who wrote this, it kind of gives you a bit more background knowledge. But I mean, it's all right. It's all right. I will say the CGI I really like, especially being for 1999. I like the themes they talk about here. They certainly talk about materialism and how everything shouldn't be about owning things. It shouldn't be about how nice something is, because that just doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It also kind of talks about mental illness, you know, kind of dealing with insomnia, which is an actual condition, and how this man can't sleep. And he's like, someone needs to help me. And the doctor's like, there's nothing I can give you. You just need to sleep. So it's just very, very fascinating, and you have some weird, weird characters in this. Let me just tell you, and one of the things that they do is with this fight club is it kind of brings in all these rejects, all these people that don't know their place in life, and quite honestly, like a fight club, it's literally all these dudes gather in the basement of a bar, and they just fight. They just fight each other, and it is gory, it is bloody, and it is good. It is really good. And you also see the kind of the changing character of Edward Norton's guy from this uppity guy. You know, he's very, schedule based. He's very schedule based. He's very, stays in his lane, rudimentary. And then he meets Tyler Durden and he becomes this let loose guy, and they live in this crappy house and they're going out and just being reckless. And it is really an experience. I'll say watching this movie is pretty much an experience. I'm pretty sure they made a second Fight Club, if I'm not mistaken. Oh no, it was they wrote a book, Fight Club too. But Fight Club the movie also stars Helena Bonham Carter. She plays a love interest, if you will, in the film, which you never really know if she's a love interest. Man, very, very weird. Ooh, let's look on Google questions. Why was Fight Club so controversial? Cultural critics Henry and Imrie describe Fight Club as a failed critique which focuses on the consumerist culture and how it shapes male identity and ignores how neoliberal capitalism has dominated and exploited society. This is a very male-focused movie, and talking about how men can struggle without anyone really noticing. But I have no idea about neoliberal capitalism. What in the world is what even is that? What even is that? Why was Fight Club banned in China? The Chinese government altered the ending of Fight Club to comply with the country's strict censorship policies. Huh. Interesting. Well, yeah, not really, like, I mean, I suppose telling you the something that happens at the end of the movie, like, isn't too big of a spoiler, but at the end of the film, they do blow up a bunch of credit card, like, towers, I kid you, like, company towers, and I don't know if that scene is, like, something bad. It was super random, you know? The entire premise was they're blowing up these credit card companies to eliminate debt so that everyone goes back to the same level. I don't know. It was such a weird premise, but yes, Fight Club, I'm gonna give it a 7.5 out of 10. I can acknowledge it is a cult classic, but certainly I think one time viewing is enough for me in terms of watching Fight Club. But ladies and gentlemen, let's not waste any more time. It's episode 200 and we're all about UFC on the podcast, surprising you every single day, jabbing you every single day. So let's get into our UFC Baku recap because it was certainly very interesting. Kicking off the card, we headed to the men's heavyweight division as Muhammad Usman took on Hamdi Abdelwahab, and Muhammad got it done. That is right, we correctly predicted Muhammad would get it done. Now, in the fashion of how this fight transpired, I mean, Hamdi came out looking strong. One round one, 16 significant strikes to 9, was chopping up Usman with the leg kicks. I truly thought Usman was going to go down on the leg kicks, especially with the first one he landed, like the first shot of the fight. Oh my goodness, Muhammad's legs were just absolutely brutalized. Then round two, you start to see Hamdi fade a bit. Muhammad's landed a bit more power shots, outstrikes from 29 to 21 significantly. You start to see a change. Round three, Hamdi is completely faded. Muhammad Usman, 48 significant strikes to 18, outstrikes him by 30, and he gets himself a little decision victory. That's right, 86 significant strikes to 55. Muhammad Usman snaps his two-fight losing streak and is back in the winning category. Good for him. Good for Muhammad Usman getting it done. You know, you never know what you're going to get with this guy. You never know what you're going to get. And there were times I felt the knockout power was there. He clipped Hamdi at least one, two, maybe three times where it was like if Hamdi didn't have a strong chin, he'd have been knocked out cold. But other than that, he just, I don't know. Muhammad Usman just, I don't know if he has the tools to climb the heavyweight division. You know, I think if we're going to give him someone ranked, because right now it's so easy to get a ranked opponent, he's going to need to beat someone on Ryan Spann's level, on Justin Toffa's level, you know, someone like those types of guys. So I'll be curious to see what happens with Muhammad Usman. As for Hamdi Abdelwahab, look, he's lost his first ever professional fight. He's 6-1 with a no contest. Dude, he's 1-1 with a no contest in the UFC now. He has just had some of the most lackluster fights. They might give him one more opportunity. You know, there's guys like Ryan Spann out there who just fought Walter Cortes Acosta. I don't know if he's serious about staying up there. I even think someone like Tai Tuivasa, you know, a pick-me-up fight, I think that would be a great option for him. But we'll have to see, because right now, heavyweight division's pretty dead, and this fight was kind of boring overall. Now, I'll tell you, in a very exciting fight, because by the way, only two finishes on this entire card. It was a very long card, I can't even lie. We did go 8-4 on predictions, so on the year, 167-84. Yeah, we are chopping it up on predictions. I mean, absolutely incredible work, but yeah, you know, just another card. This in UFC Atlanta, just, oh my goodness. Actually, on UFC Atlanta, how many finishes did we have? It was like none. We had one, two, three. We had three. We had three. That was it. So we've just been dying to get some finishes, and this card only produced two. But we'll talk about those later on. Because flyweight division, Tagir Limbekov, Oslik Maksim. This fight was pretty good. It delivered. I will say that handsomely. Tagir remains ranked at number 12. I don't know if they're going to bump him up with this, but certainly he'll be fighting upwards with a victory of this standing. And I was like, Maksum, he clearly belongs. I know people were saying that he needs to fight like lower level guys after this, but no. The 30-27, 30-27, 20-28, people were mad about that. People were saying Oslik Maksum is robbed. I had it 30-27 for Tagir Limbekov in a close fight. Like, every round was close, but I gave every single round to Tagir Ulimbekov. 68 significant strikes to 62 in favor of Tagir. Tagir goes 0 of 8 on takedowns, 3 minutes, 42 seconds control time. Asmak goes 3 of 7 on takedowns, 56 seconds of control time. So in the wrestling exchanges, Azat would land takedowns, but Tagir would always reverse them back. And these two on the feet, I mean, let me just tell you, throwing at it with each other. These two were eating some shots. They're both two technical guys that match up so well. I would love to see them rematch longer down the line. But as for Tagir Limbekov, 4-fight winning streak now. He's 6-1 in the UFC. Let's give him a top 10 guy. We got a couple options. You know, Suleiman Mabayev is taking on Ramazan Temeryov. Winner of that. Steve versus Alex Perez. Winner or loser of that, I'll say. And as for Manel Kape, I think he's fallen to a territory where he's going to have to fight down. So you're going to get a lot of fun options with Tigger Lambekov, and I'm excited to see what they do with him. As for Aslak Maksum, you know, you got your Jose Ochoas, you got your Loner Kavanaugh, your Andre Limas. If you want to keep him in the rankings, Bruno Silva, I think would be a fun fight. Winner or loser of Kai Sakura and Tim Elliott, I would love to see Aslak Maksum remain a contender in the ranked competition, because he is clearly belongs. And, you know, 15-2, his losses are a unanimous decision fight the night Charles Johnson, which some people thought he won, and a close decision against Tigger Lambekov, which some people thought he won. So let's not hold his two decisions against him. This guy is very, very talented. And by the way, not old, still in his 20s, still kicking it. We'll see if Tigger Lambekov and Aslak run it back down the line. After that, double back-to-back women's bantamweight matchups, and I'm going to keep it simple here, guys. I'm just matching up the winners with each other in this one. Claudia Segula versus Irina Oksiva, and Daria Zelenikova versus Melissa Mullins. Now, we miss on the Melissa Mullins prediction, but nail the Claudia Segula prediction, which I was ever so happy about. I was thrilled. I'm trying to think how much of an underdog she was. Claudia was plus 185, so that's not too bad to nail. I don't think that's too bad to nail, but Claudia Segula dominates Irina Oksiva in their matchup. And Irina Oksiva, I think, needs to be cut. I mean, she is now 1-2 in the UFC, losses to Melissa Mullins, and Claudia Segula left little to be desired. If you do keep her, I mean, I would say, I don't even know. She just doesn't seem like she's UFC caliber. And I didn't even think Claudia Segula was, but she clearly proved that she belongs. So Claudia Segula dominates on the feet, dominates on the ground. 101 significant strikes to 63. What if I were to tell you that Claudia Segula landed the second most significant strikes on the entire card behind Khalil Roundtree? That's utterly insane. But Irina Oksiva, bye-bye to you, unless you want a rematch, Melissa Mullins. I don't know, but yeah. Little to be loved from Irina Oksiva. But Claudia Segula, good work for making Poland proud, getting your first UFC win. I think you match up well with the next woman here in the next bout that took place, Daria Zelenikova. And Daria Zelenikova now 2-1 in the UFC, only losses to the 7th-ranked Aileen Perez. That loss has aged super well. And beat Melissa Mullins here was very good. Now, I will say, she almost knocked out Melissa in the first 30 seconds of the fight. She emptied the tank on her. Holy cow, it was absolutely crazy. 44 significant strikes at 26. And the tail of this entire fight was Daria wins like the first 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and then Melissa Mullins ends every single round on top, which was kind of weird from a judging standpoint. But yeah, landed 3 of 6 takedowns, but just on the feet, Daria was chopping her up, keeping her in the clinch, and was able to get it done. Melissa Mullins now 2-2 in the UFC. She'll definitely remain. I don't know against who, you know. I think Jocelyn Edwards has a fight that she's maybe coming up against someone, if I can't really remember. She's ranked, what is Jocelyn at right now? She's 14. You can match her up with maybe Chelsea Chandler. I have no idea how Chelsea Chandler's still in the rankings at 15. And if you wanted to give Daria a shot against, what's her name? Chelsea Chandler, yes, you could do that as well. But I think Daria and Claudia matching them up, putting that one of them will be on, whoever wins that will be on a 2-fight winning streak. That's what you should do. And as for Melissa Mullins, she's already beaten Irina Oksiva. So if you do want to run that back, you could. But women's bantamweight division, yeah, kind of dead. After that, men's middleweight action as the Iron Turtle Jun Young Park takes on Ishmael Nurudeva. This was a wonky, weird fight. Let me tell you that. This was a weird, weird fight. So, for starters, Ishmael Nurudeev is pouring it on Jun Young Park. You know, okay, 52 significant strikes to 26. He dominated him in round number one. But Jun Young Park was firing back. You know, it wasn't necessarily a bad loss, but he did lose round number one. Okay, Ishmael had him. Round two, Jun Young Park finds himself on the ground, and he has a knee and a hand on the mat, and Ishmael hits him with an illegal knee. Ref steps in, Ishmael starts celebrating like he won, and yeah, the ref is like, no, this is an illegal knee. There's a nasty cut on Jun Young Park's eye, and he definitely could have stopped. Jun Young Park could have stopped right there, right then, but he didn't. He'd also been dealing with some eye pokes from Ishmael Nurudeev. It had been sloppy. So what instead happens? Jun Young Park proceeds to continue to fight. The ref takes 2 points from Ishmael Nurudeev. Insane. I've only seen 2 points be taken twice, apparently. I had to literally look on Twitter and be like, oh, I've actually seen those fights where it's taken, but I couldn't remember an instance where 2 points had been taken in a UFC fight. Following that, Joongryung Park would dominate the rest of the round. He would win that round, but every single judge would score round two for Ishbal Durdiev. It was insane. Looking on verdict, I'm like, am I crazy that I'm the only one who thought Joongryung Park won round two? Thankfully, he did. Round three, Joongryung Park, 10-8. 10-8 round, takes him down, tries to submit him, 4.5 minutes of control time, domination from Joongryung Park. And he gets the 29-26, 29-26, and 29-25 decision victory. 29-25, gotta be the weirdest scorecard I've seen in a long time. I've seen 30-25s, but a 29-25? I don't even know. And if you hadn't even given Ishbal Durdiev round two, I mean, you've gotten a 29-24. Which would have been pretty awesome. So, thankfully, Joongryung Park gets this one done. The Iron Turtle remains victorious. Two-fight winning streak now for him. And in terms of his UFC tenure, I mean, this dude is now sitting at 9-3 in the UFC. Losses to Anthony Hernandez, Gregory Rodriguez, and Andre Munoz. And now a little two-fight win streak. I mean, Joongryung Park, I'm ready to look up. I'm ready to look up for Joongryung Park. And, you know, in terms of ranked middleweights, I would say Paulo Costa, Roman Kapilov, the loser of that. I'd say if Rainer Day Ritter loses to Robert Whittaker, you can make that fight. People were saying maybe the loser of Marvin Vettori and Brendan Allen. I don't know. And I think the winner of Jack Hermanson and Greg Rodriguez versus Joongryung Park, especially if it's Jack Hermanson, I like all those options for Park. I think those are all very good options. As for Ishbal Durdiev, brutal performance here, buddy. Brutal performance. This is return now, 1-1, but yeah. Yeah, you cannot be doing that, my man. You cannot be doing that if you're Ishbal Durdiev. But thankfully, I have a next matchup to make for Ishbal Durdiev, and you have Cedric Dumas taking on this Jackson McVeigh guy next weekend at UFC 317. How about the winner of that takes on Ishbal Durdiev? Look at that. We're matchmaking on the go. I absolutely love that. So Ishbal Durdiev can take on the winner of that. And as for Joongryung Park, the Iron Turtle, he remains victorious. After that, we got into our final prelim of the evening, and this was my second misprediction of the evening. And you know, I should have known that being a plus 600 underdog was just too good to be true with Seok Kyung-ko, the Korean Tyson, as he grapples himself to a victory against Oban, the Welsh gangster Elliot. 30-27s across the board, including 10 minutes 15 seconds of control time. Yikes. Yeah, this one was a doozy. Seok Kyung-ko, 6 of 9 on takedowns, 33 significant strikes to 10, 80 total strikes to 19. Oban had no answer for the grappling. Quite honestly, no answer. 2 takedowns in round 1, 2 takedowns in round 2, and make that 2 takedowns in round 3. He did what he had to do. Oban, 4 significant strikes round 1, 3 and 2, and 3 and 3. Just rough. Just rough for Oban, Elliot. As for Seok Kyung-ko, I mean, this guy, 12 and 2 now. His winning streak, if I can check my notes, is now at 8-fight winning streak. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Good stuff. It's at 5-fight win streak. Good. Same thing. 5-8. Same thing for Seok Kyung-ko. But yeah, for being the Korean Tyson, he turned into the Korean Marab tonight. I think that's what everyone was saying. Good stuff for Seok Kyung-ko. Getting a win in the welterweight divisions, what you need to do. And as for Oban Elliott, his 8-fight. Okay, that's why I was thinking of 8-fight win streak. His 8-fight win streak is snapped. But you know, you run into these types of opportunities where you lose and you just need to find ways to get back. So what's next for both these guys? Oban Elliott will probably take on someone unranked in the welterweight division. There is a plethora of options out there. I know Jacoby Smith is taking on Nico Price. Maybe the winner of that you could do. Phil Rowe just lost last week, and I think Phil Rowe matches up great with the winner or loser of each of those. Michael Chiesa is a name you could throw around in the barrel of guys you could take on. There is just so many. So many. You know, Vicente Luque, I really like for maybe Seok Kyung-ko. And as for Oban, I mean, Andreas Gustafsson, that's a name we saw last week. And even Chaos Williamson could run that back with Oban. But yeah, there's just so many guys both of them could take on. But yeah, just kind of an exciting fight whatsoever. And then we got into thankfully the final fight before we actually had back-to-back entertaining fights, because I kid you not, I was getting drained, and I could tell the UFC Baku card was getting drained as Muhammad Naimov took on Bogdan Grodd. Now, I did score this for Bogdan Grodd, but I can understand how Muhammad Naimov won this contest. Muhammad wins the 29-28, 29-28, 29-28 unanimous decision. But it was more of like a split decision, in my opinion. Totals from the fight, 31 significant strikes for Bogdan, 18 for Muhammad Naimov. Total strikes, 70 for Naimov, 49 for Bogdan. Muhammad goes 1 of 3 on takedowns for 2 minutes, 53 seconds. Bogdan, 3 of 10 on takedowns for 5 minutes and 9 seconds. Round 1, Bogdan takes it. it, lands a takedown, gets the better of Naimov, gets it done. Round two, you know, I thought Bogdan had it. I really did, but I guess not. I guess Bogdan didn't have it, or maybe they scored round one for Naimov. And then round three was honestly a 50-50 round. I mean, on the verdict scorecard, it was separated by decimal points, and Bogdan Grad doesn't get it. They give it to Muhammad Naimov. So, unfortunate stuff for Bogdan Grad, snapping his little winning streak, but this dude can clearly hang in the featherweight division. I'll say that for certain. He'll certainly be back. And as for Muhammad Naimov, a little two-fight winning streak now. His only UFC loss is to Felipe Lima, who's now opening the International Fight Week pay-per-view card against Peyton Talbot. I mean, what? Why are we doing that? Why is Gregor Rodriguez versus Jack Hermanson not on the main card? But yeah, two-fight win streak for Muhammad Naimov, and Bogdan Grag suffers his first UFC defeat. But yeah, very technical, very back and forth, and you know, Muhammad Naimov and Bogdan Grag, both from, not really like necessarily from the region, but you know, to an extent from the region. I don't know, in terms of featherweight, who I would like to see them take on. I mean, it's tricky because there's so many unranked featherweights. Neither of these guys are going near the rankings for the foreseeable future. But if I could just poke around some past cards of people who have fought as of late, because that's how I've been recently doing it. Marquez Acosta versus Muhammad Naimov, I could get behind. Julian Arosa versus Bogdan Grad, that could be fun. Yair Deval, who debuted against Conor Matthews earlier this year, against either of these guys, I could get behind. Who are some other guys? I'll throw out some other names for you guys to keep aware of who these two could take. But no ranked opponents for now. Patricio Pitbull Danigue, the loser of one of those, maybe. Sean Woodson could be a name you see Muhammad Naimov taking on. I don't know. There's a lot of options. But yes, this fight happened. This fight was over. And sadly, oh my gosh, I actually was really happy because this was another prediction we missed on. I was really thinking Bogdan Grad at plus 200 was going to cash. But he didn't. He loses a close split decision, unanimous decision, but I wasn't mad about it. Then, ladies and gentlemen, we got to the highlight of the night. I knew this was going to be good. You know, I could tell it was going to be good, but I just never thought it was going to be this good. Nazim Sadikov, the Black Wolf, and Iron Nicholas Mota give us not just an amazing knockout, not just one of the greatest fights of the year, but one of the greatest fights I have seen in all time. One of the greatest two-rounders of all time. I mean, wow. Wow, these two went to absolute war with one another. Absolute war. This was insane. Nazim Sadikov gets the fight of the night and performance of the night bonuses. Give that Nicholas Mota that extra 50K. This made me my runner for fight of the year. This was insane. So to open the fight, these two striking with each other. Then Mota starts putting the pressure on him. I mean, it was absolutely wild. You're watching like Nazim Sadikov is going to get knocked out. And then I kid you not, Michael Bisping got the official numbers. A 75 strike punch combo from Nicholas Mota, who drops Nazim Sadikov just about multiple times, has him just up against the fence, has laid into the ref, is about to jump in. You know, Nazim is leading, grabbing onto his foot to hang in. Then Nazim shoves him off him, hits him with a punch, hits him with an elbow, hits him with an upkick, fights his way back. He's then putting the pressure on Nicholas Mota. Round one, one of the best rounds of 2025. You could even say one of the best rounds of all time. We head to round two. The momentum is swinging. Nazim Sadikov is opening combos left, right, and center. And he's clipping him. Then he's coming back and he's clipping him. And then eventually, these two are just gushing blood. It is absolutely wild. And then Nazim has him up against the cage, hitting him with body shots, then an uppercut. And then he's just laying into him. And Nazim Sadikov gets the knockout victory. Make it his eighth career knockout. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. This might have me going crazy in my living room. Oh my goodness. This was the highlight. I sat through all those decisions just for this glorious, glorious fight. And totals from the fight, knockdown for each of these guys. 102 total strikes for Nazim, 76 for Nicholas Mota. Oh my goodness, just crazy. Just absolutely crazy. And Nazim Sadikov making an 11-fight winning streak now, 12-fight unbeaten streak. And yes, he is now 4-0 and one. He has one draw in the UFC. And by the way, fight of the night. This dude is so far 5-5 on UFC fights. Even his Dana White's Contender Series performance, amazing. And yeah, with that, we can look upwards. We can look upwards to the rankings. He is Muhammad Aljamain Sterling in his corner. This dude's an absolute dog. You know, you have Grant Dawson at 14. You got Benoit Saint-Denis at 13. Joel Alvarez is in there at 15. Yeah, get this guy a ranked opponent, for goodness sakes. This dude is straight money, and he is an Azerbaijan native, and he had the crowd going ballistic. It was scenes in Baku. This was the highlight of the entire weekend. I kid you not. Nazim Sadikov, Nicholas Mota going to war. So yeah, for Nazim, give him someone in the bottom 15. I know we're going to mention Ignacio Mohamedez. He's a guy you could maybe take on, but I'd really love to see him get an actual someone with a ranked number next to them. As for Nicholas Mota, look, I've always counted Nicholas Mota out since watching him get knocked up by Manuel Torres and Jim Miller. But honestly, since 2024, he's now 2-1. His only loss is this fight of the night, performance of the night, against Nazim Sadikov. I mean, I would not be too mad about this. They're definitely going to bring Nicholas Mota back. Lots to do at lightweight. And I honestly think you could give this guy a tough opponent next. You really could give him a tough opponent. Maybe a Daniel Zaluber, a Esteban Ribovic. I will even go as far to say Ignacio Mohamedez, who we're going to mention in a second. I think there are options to be had with Nicholas Mota. But Nicholas Mota clearly belongs in the UFC. And I feel if we were to release him, he would go off and just dominate some ever promotion that he's in. But yeah, good stuff from Nazim Sadikov and Nicholas Mota. And while I'm actually thinking of it, speaking of other promotions, I watched the PFL on Friday, their championship. By the way, a lot of boring fights. The main event, watching Nurmagomedov, whatever, he had freaking Khabib in his corner or something. Dagestani, watching him fight, he didn't actually have Khabib, but watching him just absolutely destroy Kevin Lee was hilarious. I mean, Kevin Lee dropped 3+ times in round number one before getting knocked out. I mean, oh my goodness, Kevin Lee just ain't got it no more. And it was just comedic to watch. I'm so sorry. But yeah, watch that. Actually placed top in the world on the prelim predictions. I actually know PFL ball, if you didn't know. So we'll look for my predictions there if you're ever on Verdict. But after that, Mytebek Orelbay, Tofik Musayev. Orelbay gets his 6th career submission and his 12th career finish out of 14 wins. He improves to 3-1 in the UFC. Now, I was very happy that Mytebek got this one done, but this was a last-second change to 165. Because Mytebek couldn't make 155. So Tofik Musayev did have to debut against a guy who naturally was coming in heavier, and Mytebek used that to his advantage. 3 of 5 on takedowns. Fight lasted 4.5 minutes. 3 and 7/5 of this round. 3 minutes 45 seconds was Mytebek in control time. So it wasn't even a full minute of this fight that Mytebek wasn't in control and just absolutely took him down, ragdoll him, and hit him with a Kimura with about 25 seconds left. So good win for Mytebek. It was hype watching, then when I learned he missed weight by that much, yeah, that needs to be something you change. So if Mytebek is to remain at lightweight, he will need to make weight in his next bout, if you will. But if he does want to switch it up and move to welterweight, I think that could be a career move that he can make as well. And I would love to see, could throw him right in the mix, honestly, at welterweight. There's good unranked guys. Even Buckley, Hulk Joaquin Buckley versus actually, no, because I watched the fight against Matheus Rebecca, and that was naturally at 155. So, Mytebek, it'll be tricky to see what they do with him, but if Joel Alvarez does fight Benoit Saint-Denis, the loser of that versus him, or even he can fight either of those guys right now, but Mytebek is a legit guy. As for Tofik Musayev, snaps his little winning streak, 35 years old, debuting, lost. I say they bring him back. I'm saying it doesn't hurt to bring him back, 155. You could have Tofik take on Nicholas Mota, for goodness sake. You could have Tofik take on Drew Dober, Manuel Torres. I don't know. Let's give Tofik one last shot in the UFC. But losing in front of your home nation of Azerbaijan like that, kind of unfortunate. But I nailed the prediction, so I wasn't too mad. After that, heavyweight action, and this is where we'll get into our Tom Aspinall talk. But Curtis Blaydes takes on Rizvan Kuniyev. And I'm going to say, for starters, is that yes, this went to a split decision, but this just kind of showed that maybe Curtis Blaydes doesn't have what he used to, as he goes 2 of 15 on takedowns, does outstrike Rizvan significantly, 56 to 45, total strikes 101 to 58. He gets it done. But round one, Curtis, 2 of 9 on takedowns, 3 minutes of control time, dominates Rizvan Kuniyev. Round two, Rizvan keeps on the feet. 24 significant strikes to 16, doesn't get taken down, does what he needs to. Then round three, Curtis holds him up against the cage, drowns him in punches, 61 total strikes to 19, significantly 28 to 13. Rizvan just couldn't hang. Split decision goes to Curtis Blaydes. Should have been, I don't even know who scored. Who was it? Was it Ben Cartlidge? It was Ben Cartlidge who gave round number three to Rizvan Khudiyev. Shouldn't have given it to him, but oh well. Curtis Blaydes gets back into the win category. What if I tell you his last win was March 2024? Crazy to think about, but yes, Curtis, he'll remain ranked at number 5 in the men's heavyweight division, and he was mentioning his goal is to get back to a title shot, and yes, he will actually, with John Jones getting booted, this is actually crazy. You're actually going to have someone debut in the men's rankings, and I think it should be Rizvan Khudiyev, maybe down at 15 or something. But yeah, I just realized if they're booting John Jones, Aspinall will move up to champion, Shirogan to 1, Volkov to 2, Pavlich to 3, Blaydes will be ranked number 4, Holtlemain to 5. Yeah. Which means Waldo Cortes Acosta is going to be ranked number 6. That's utterly ridiculous. But Rizvan Khudiyev can clearly hang with these heavyweights. And if we were to put Rizvan against Muhammad Usman, Abdi Abdul-Wahab, I think he would handsomely beat them. But yeah, Rizvan gets his little 10-fight winning streak, whatever, 11-fight winning streak snapped. But not too bad. Took Curtis Blaydes to a boring split decision. Showed you can hang in there. Showed great takedown defense. 13 takedowns defended. That's pretty freaking good. So what do we do next with these guys? You know, if it's Curtis Blaydes, I just have to look. He called out Ciryl Gane. And I really like that, but I just think Ciryl Gane is the perfect first opponent for Tom Aspinall. So I'm saying after that fight happens, Curtis Blaydes can take on the loser, which is probably going to be Ciryl Gane, because right now heavyweight is in a bit of a pickle. So we can match make Waldo Cortes Acosta with Sergey Pavlovich. That's booked. Now, Alexander Volkov and Holtlemain both need opponents. I think you have to match them up. And Curtis Blaydes, sadly, will not be making that Chicago card in August. He did take some damage. He's looking to return September, October. So if you did want to run him versus Gane, I think you should. But the UFC is meeting with Tom Aspinall next week, and they are going to figure out who his next opponent is. As for Rizvan Khudiyev, going to be honest, the 7 through 15, book him against any of them. Book Rizvan Khudiyev against any of these guys. You know, honestly, if you want to give him a good opponent right off the bat, Martin Boudet. Martin Boudet, Rizvan Khudiyev. You could even go Mick Parkin at 13. But Rizvan Khudiyev clearly has some skill. I just think Curtis Blaydes had way more experience and was able to weather the storm. But yeah, not the most entertaining fight. Co-main event, lightweight division, and yet again a doozy of a fight. But the number 11, Rafael Fiziev, shocks me as he beats Ignacio Bahomadez. 30-27s across the board. And he even goes 4-4 on takedowns, shockingly. Round 1, Rafael just barely outstrikes him. Round 2, Ignacio was actually outstriking him on the feet. So Rafael took him down twice. Round 3, Rafael's outstriking him on the feet. And a couple significant strikes for Landon from landing takedowns, yeah. Yeah, Rafael just needed to get a victory, and he did. His first win in 3 freaking years. So Rafael does what he needs to do and gets it done, but this was boring. This was just not exciting. I was doing, like, side chores while this was going on. I was, like, cleaning out my house, for goodness sakes. But, yeah, I can do without this down the line, rewatching this. But good win for Fiziev. You got to do what you got to do. It's not the exciting UFC fighting league. It's the ultimate fighting league. And sometimes you have to get the boring wins to remain relevant. As for Ignacio, 3-fight winning streak snapped. But, yeah. He'll have other options down the line. I was saying Nicholas Mota could be someone. This dude can clearly hang with ranked lightweights. You could even give him the loser of Moicano and Dariush. You could do that for either of them. But as for Fiziev, I say you run back the Matheus Gamrot fight. I would really love to see that. Both those guys healthy. Gamrot willingly saying, I'll fight down. And Fiziev and him having history from 2023. I say you do that. I say you run that one back. For Ignacio, I think Joel Alvarez and him, they're both tall lightweights. That could be a fun contest. Joel Alvarez is just someone always fun you can matchmake guys against. But Ignacio, tough loss. As for Rafael, you know, kind of in front of a home crowd, if you will. Very good stuff. Then, ladies and gentlemen, the main event. And to make matters funny, a lot of the crowd left. A lot of the crowd left because the crowd came to watch some of their boys. Nazim Sadikov, Tofik Musaev, Rafael Fiziev. They could care less about Khalil Roundtree Jr. and Jamahal Hill. And to be honest, I don't blame you. You would have missed nothing in this fight. Boring. bland plane. The only reason this wasn't terrible is because Khalil almost knocked Jamal out in round three and because there was a crowd to deal with. But Khalil dominates Jamal every single round, gets better throughout the entire fight. 102 significant strikes to 69. Neither man attempts a takedown, no one's surprised. And round five, they did unload a bit more, but yeah, nothing exciting. In terms of my current rankings for fights of the, for main events of the year for fight nights, let me actually look right here, because I have been keeping track just to keep a current ranking going. I think I have this as like my number 10. Mind you, there have been like 15 events, so it's not saying much, but this might have been a bit better than Brandon Moreno versus Steve Ersing, which isn't really saying too much, so I don't really know. This was just a doozy. It did show how freaking good Khalil Roundtree Jr. is. I mean, this dude's now going to be ranked number 4 in the world, and he's really thrown himself back into the title picture. And mind you, let's not act like this guy's now 6-1 in his last 7. Since 2021, he's 6-1. His only loss is to Alex Barra in a Fight of the Year contender. Yeah. He's pretty freaking good. As for Jamal Hill, 3-fight losing streak, hasn't won since January 2023. Let's give him a pick-me-up. Let's not keep throwing Jamal Hill to the top guys in the world. Jamal's going to be bumped down to 5 or something, so I know what should be next. I know what should be next. I say we do Khalil Roundtree Jr. versus one of the outliers here. Now, you got Jiří Procházka, who I think you should just give the next title shot. You know, I think Alex Pereira needs to move on. I think Alex Pereira needs to move on. Now, if you do Alex Pereira versus Magomed Ankalaev 2, Jiří needs to fight Carlos Ubert. So then, what do you do with Khalil? I think Khalil could take on Jan Blachowicz, or he just waits. I've seen people saying Dominic Reyes, but I would more love to see Jamal Hill versus Dominic Reyes as opposed to anything. The other option, opposed to that, Azamat Mirzakhanov. So there only are two guys who I'm going to throw names in the ring, and it's Azamat and Dominic to take on Jamal Hill. And as for Khalil, I would love to see Carlos Ulberg or Jan Blachowicz. That's what I think you should do there. It all depends what happens with Alex Pereira and Magomed Ankalaev. But I think Alex Pereira needs to move on. I think retiring off of that would be an excellent career option, but I don't make the decisions. I just simply observe them. So yeah, that's what you can do. But UFC Baku, boring card. One cool fight of the night, two finishes. Yeah. That's all you're gonna get. But we look past from UFC Baku. All right, I don't know if they're going back to Azerbaijan after this one. But ahead, UFC 317. Which, by the way, on UFC stats right now, I kid you not, only has 8 fights listed. I have no idea what's going on. I know they're going to have more than 8 fights. But as of right now, you have to appear at Charles Oliveira praying they still can stay healthy in the main event. I don't even want to watch it because I love both of them so much. Co-main event, Alexander Pantoa versus Kai Kara France. Love that. Brandon Royval, Joshua Van, beautiful. Money Moicano back against Benil Dariush. That should be fun. Peyton Talbot, Felipe Lima. Two high bantamweight prospects. Only one can move upwards. Jack Hermanson, Gregory Rodriguez. Good fight for both of them. Vivian Arujo, Tracy Cortez. Decent prelim, and Hanada Dinas, Justin Taffa. Somebody better get knocked out in that one. But yes, everyone, that is your UFC Baku official recap, and that'll conclude episode 200. I'm actually down at college. I have a lot of stuff to move out, and I gotta get back home. I gotta see my familia. That is what has to be done. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, you guys have an amazing week. Thank you all for the support. Episode 200, we'll be back for 300 in under a year or so. I can promise you that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.